Stavra nice vortam parsh vayishlach vayishivi hamaluchem al yankav laim albun yelachich vol aisa vagam hoylech al kraschu v'arba maisesh imoy. Right, the maluchem came to tell Yankov Vini that Isaac was coming with all his people. But yiri Yankov moed v'yitzeloi. So it looked like Yankov Vini got scared all over again. You know, what really happened now that he heard this special message from the maluchem? What was anything new that he found out? It seems that he knew how dangerous his brother was all along. You know, so he has 400 people that are coming with him. Was that really the... You know, he knew that he was a Moshe and a Sayer. He knew that he had a lot of people, I said. That wasn't the secret. So the Shem Shmuel brings a word from his father, David Neizer. And he says, he brings on the Pusik, his father, David Neizer says it about Chris Yamsef. V'yisi b'nai Yisrael sanayim, v'yinu mitzrayim nesay achrayim, v'yiri m'oid v'yitzakim b'nai Yisrael l'Hashem. What happened? Yiddish kind of picked up their eyes, they saw Mitzrayim coming, and they became very afraid. Now, first of all, the Yidden already saw so many Nisim and Afluas in Mitzrayim. You know, it doesn't make sense that all of a sudden they're afraid. Hashem was able to kill so many people, all of a sudden the Mitzrayim are coming and you know, Hashem won't be able to help them now. You know, what were they so afraid of? So, it means that Rashi says that Mitzrayim Nesai Achrayim means Belev Echad Ke'ish Echad. They were coming as one. They were coming one big group. You know, they were coming with a togetherness. And when Klal Yisrael saw that, they were very afraid of it. The koyach va'achd is coming together. That's a koyach hakadisha. That's a very strong koyach. And Klal Yisrael saw that the Mitzrayim have this koyach of being united, you know, really into it together. That's what they were afraid of. And they were afraid that this koyach hakadisha is gonna be matzliach against them. Something they didn't see before. So even if Hashem was able to kill all the Mitzrayim and take care of them in Mitzrayim, make a lot of nisim and the fluas and makas and whatever else, this was something they were afraid of. So the Shemeshmiel explains the same thing over here with Yankov Vini. When he heard that there are arba mayas ish imoy, it doesn't say anusham, it says ish alushan yuchad. And they were imoy, they were coming all together, it doesn't say itoy, tagging along. They were imoy with Isaf together, Bedaya Achas, you know, 400 people together like that. That's something they were very afraid, because that's when Yankov Vini was afraid, because it's coming from the Koyach HaKadisha. And this is definitely something, and this was Yirim Vayirimoyed, he was very afraid of that. There's something about the Koyach HaAchdas. I must have quoted this for some in the past. It says by Dora Fluga, it says that they said that we're going to build a ladder up to Shemayim and we're going to fight with Hashem. Right? And that was the chet of Dora Fluga. You know, and again, it looks like it was an Arashkat. You build a tower to Shemayim, fight with Hashem. So he brings a lution that you see by Kulav Ben Yifinah, but the Meraglim, he also told the Eden. If Moshe Rabbeinu told us to make ladders and go up to Shemayim, we'll also be able to. Right? And over there, it was such a good thing to say. You know, if Moshe Rabbeinu tells us, we're going to do it. And over here, it looks like such a silly thing to say, because he says that when people are ba'achdis and they do it together, then that's something that works. No matter what they want to do, they can accomplish whatever they want. And that's why Dora Fluga, when they said, "Nas a silam, we're going to go up to Shemayim with a ladder," what the Eibishter had to do was he had to separate them, because they would have been together in it. They would have been matzliach in that too. More ridiculous words. The koyach ha'achdis, what people could accomplish by being together. So when we talk about shumbayas, we're talking about being together. There's so much that can be accomplished by people being together. When people are united, I say it all the time, I see people struggling so often with different problems, you know, small problems, big problems. If only they would be together in it, if only a husband and wife would be together fighting a problem together, everything would be so much easier. And when they're not together, even the smallest problems just become bigger just because they're not together in it. And I'll tell you, sometimes that alone, the fact that a couple is together and united and they understand each other and have feelings for each other and they're together in a relationship, that alone is a sign that it's a good thing. I'm not talking now about being mevater. Sometimes it's a separate discussion. Sometimes people are like, just give up on this and be together. Not always that called being together. You know, you want one thing, I want something else. The fact that I give up my rights to have an opinion doesn't mean we're together. I'm talking about where we are together. When husband and wife understand each other and they're in something badaya achas, that alone very often is something very powerful. So one place where I notice that people should understand that more is that you have sometimes parents that marry off children and they don't like what the kids are doing. Now I know it's often very disturbing. It is. And a lot of times it's problematic as well. But the fact that the couple is together, sometimes that alone is a healthy thing and a good thing. And by breaking them apart and talking to one against the other and showing them how, you're just making things worse. It doesn't mean that whatever they do together is always good. It doesn't. And sometimes there's a way to deal with that. But sometimes pulling them apart from each other is worse than being together. So that's something that's important to understand. Both from the very fact that people are together or something and talking truly together is a sign they're doing something right. See a couple that's doing the wrong thing. They're together, you know, they're both doing these crazy things. doesn't take long until you see them not getting along. Together. But that's a whole. And see where this applies. You know, how people should be together. Also mentioned, you know, I mentioned another part also. In preparation for this share, I prepared a part and I realized that I was on the wrong parsha. But I'll say it anyway, briefly. There's a Sefer David Azov. He brings over there by the Pusik where Yankiv has the shepherds, the Royim, Ma'ay, Natan Yom Nimchur and Anochni. So the David Azov says that when people are humble, when people, you know, aren't arrogant, they don't think too much of themselves, they get along with each other. Full of himself, self-absorbed, just, you know, balgava, then you can't get along with anyone. So that was what Yankov was asking them. Achem ma'ayin atam. Ayin is illusion and gurnish, you know, when someone's nothing. He said, Achem ma'ayin atam, are you humble? Are you nothing by yourself? Do you not think too much of yourself? And they said, no. Mechuren anachni. Mechuren is like charanaf. We get angry at each other. They were answering that it seems that we're not too humble if we don't get along. So that's also just, you know, watching people get along and making room for one another and understanding the other person and being flexible and making plays. That's the way it should be. So let me read a question. Dear Rabbi Gurman, thank you for your shiurim on Torah anytime. I enjoy listening to them and find them very practical to learn from. Okay, thank you for that. I have a question about handling finances in marriage that I hope you can answer. Generally, I am, quote-unquote, in charge of the finances in our marriage. My husband and I both earn income. And I'm generally the one who adds it up, pays the bills, budgets how much we have to spend on groceries, etc. I want to mention that we both know everything going on and there are no secrets. Generally, this seems to be working fine, but I have a sister who reads The Empowered Wife by Laura Doyle, which happens to be another name for The Surrendered Wife, in which it says that the husband should be 100% in charge of finances and the wife should not be included at all. My sister constantly tells me that I should back off from being involved with my finances and leave all decisions up to my husband. Although neither my husband nor I are big spenders, my husband is definitely more of a spender than me, whereas I am more of a saver. I sometimes feel uncomfortable telling my husband that we can't afford ABC or that we should rather save money for XYZ. A recent example was, you know, again, I don't know if I should say anything so detailed and so identifying, but there was a certain need in the house. We needed something, and he got the more expensive ones, and we could have done with a cheaper one. I ended up not mentioning anything about it because I don't want to micromanage my husband's financial choices, and also because he felt he's doing me and the children a favor by buying more expensive ones. I know that all the money I earn belongs to my husband, and my husband has expressed to me more than once that he appreciates that I budget for us. I'm wondering what the Torah perspective on this is on this, whether or not the wife should be handling the finances, or whether it's ideal for me to be telling my husband what we can or can't afford. I hope you can answer this in your shiurim, as it's been on my mind for a while. Thank you very much. Okay, very good question. Is it okay if a wife is in charge of finances if Laura Doyle says not? No, I'm just kidding. I didn't mean to be so cynical. But, you know, that's the question. Is the fact that a husband, you know, the money belongs to him, so we should let him make all decisions, and a wife shouldn't be handling things and speaking up and giving her opinion on things. So I'll tell you, very often that's what happens when people read different articles and books. I remember once hearing this in the shiur from a big speaker. He said that he used to get a certain magazine in his house, a Jewish magazine, until he realized that every week his wife had another sickness. Sometimes it was emotional, sometimes it was physical, sometimes it was mental. Whatever she read about that week, that's what she had. You know, that's what some people tend to do. You read an article, you read a book, and you always take it personal. So whatever you're reading about, that's something you have. You know, and this is where some people you know, get stuck. They read, and same thing with my shiur. I'll say it clearly. I'm saying I give these classes on Shalom Bayis, and I know that some people, you know, will tell me later, oh, you know about that, I think maybe it's like a problem in my marriage. Well, is it or isn't it? If it's not, it's not. Not everything has to be a problem just because you hear someone talking about a problem. And this is something also that I mentioned lately about a caller who wrote to me. You know, so many Shalom Bayis shiurim. She's so afraid to get married. It looks like there's so many problems. There's so many people that deal with Shalom Bayis. It must be like a terrible endeavor. And my answer was, you know, when you buy a car and you see mechanics all over the place, are you afraid to drive the car? Or on the contrary, the fact that there's a mechanic means that if something does go wrong, you'll have a way to go. You have to travel to Los Angeles to find a mechanic. Wherever you go, there's one. But it doesn't mean that driving a car is necessarily dangerous and that your car's going to break down. So I think it's the same thing with Shalom Bayis. There's definitely relationships that are doing well and they're just fine. So not every time you read about something being a problem doesn't mean it's automatically going to be a problem in your relationship. It's something to think about. Now, I'm not saying that any relationship should be on autopilot. I think that most people could benefit from listening to Shalom Bayis classes and being attuned to the ideas of what makes a husband and wife happy and what disturbs someone and what could cause a problem. And see, oh, maybe I'm doing something wrong. It's wonderful. You could always enhance. You can enhance even the best relationship. But to look at everything like a problem and be afraid when things seem to be going relatively well, I think that alone is a problem. Now, the surrendered wife, the empowered wife, is definitely a secular source, first of all. It's not something set in stone at all. Let me just start with that. Anything you read in any book, unless it's a Torah, unless it's a Shulchan Aruch, unless you're reading a Hadrucha that you're seeing from a Talmud Chochem or a Yiddish Cipher, and even then there's different opinions on how to interpret things, but unless you're seeing something that's Torahdik, Das Torah, nothing's set in stone. So if you read something like Dale Carnegie, or you read something like The Surrendered Wife, or you read any book, any self-help book, or any idea that's not coming from Torah de Gashkofa, specifically Torah de, you should already just know that it's not set in stone. I'll just mention this much, because the five love languages, for example, people get very stuck on things that says in those books, or men are from Mars, or women are from Venus. You know, if you choose to read these secular books, or if you ask the Das Torah if they're good for you or not good for you, that's your choice. But to think that everything that says there is Torah Shebiksav, it's pretty ridiculous. I'll tell you clearly that a lot of times these books are talking about situations, again, that are not even relevant or pertinent to everyone at all. The Surrendered Wife is definitely written by somebody who struggled in her marriage with a husband who, for lack of a better term, was being difficult. And her advice to people in that situation was to just let your husband run all the finances and say nothing. Now, how good an advice that was, I don't know, check on Amazon the reviews on the book and see how many people are happy with that advice and how many think it just enabled things to get worse. That's up to you to decide. But if people who aren't in that position, and it's a husband and a wife who are understanding each other and helping each other and everything's just fine, and because Laura Doyle said something, you get all afraid, you know, maybe I shouldn't have anything to do with the finances, what type of ridiculousness? I think that's definitely... No, there's no blanket statement for anyone. So, you know, if it works for you, it doesn't work for you, I mean, it's definitely something you have to assess instead of taking it so seriously. Now, the fact that, you know, I'll talk about the finance part and the Torah part in a minute. I'm just saying that unless it's a Torahic idea, you don't have to conform to an idea. If the Torah says something, you conform to it even if it doesn't pertain to you, even if you don't feel that it pertains to you, even if you can't relate to it, because the Torah says so. But if it's not Torah and you don't see how it's going to help your marriage or how it's helping you, I don't see why someone would take something so seriously. That's my opinion. Now, the fact that your sister is very into it, again, I don't know who your sister is. I don't know who you are. I don't know if in her marriage that was necessary. Could be somebody gave her that book because her managing finances was hurting her relationship. Or could be she wasn't as clear as you are about who the money really belongs to and how to spend and understand each other. But I have no idea. Now, sisters could be best friends, and you'll find a lot of magnets and bumper stickers about that, but they're not always good mentors. Very often, I hear this so often, you know, it's nice that women have sisters to talk to, and it's beautiful. Sometimes, you're talking to somebody who either doesn't understand, or is not sensitive enough to your relationship, or is too close to you for comfort, and will automatically validate everything you have to say, and make you feel like a victim sometimes, and just rehash things because they don't have the understanding, or they're not professional how to be able to hear you and guide you and things like that. It's very important. The person who you feel the most comfortable talking to might not be the best person to guide you in your marriage or in other areas for that matter. And it's not only a sister, it could be a neighbor, it could be anyone. Certainly when parents are talking to married kids about their marriage and things like that, you could be very often talking to someone you feel most comfortable talking to, and that person is not the right person to guide you and to advise you what to do. I'm just mentioning it here also. You know, the fact that your sister read a book and she's telling you you're doing things wrong. I don't know. So why are you taking that so seriously? And I think you should be discussing with people who might be a little more, I don't want to use the word professional, because they might not have to be professional for that, but definitely people who might be more educated and sensitive to certain areas and certain ideas. So that's first of all. Now, let's get to the idea. The question was, how much should a woman, yes or not, be in charge of finances, regardless of what the Surrendered Wife advises in this area? Now, I'm not really sure what the word in charge means. It happened to be in double quotes, so I don't know what it means to be in charge of finances. The way it sounds to me from the question is it's a woman who's simply carrying the burden of paying bills and working on a budget, making sure things are paid and not neglected, allocating different money for different things, or maybe putting away some savings. It sounds like it's with a very good feeling on both sides. It sounds like a husband and wife are both happy about it. Sounds like there's transparency. That's what you're telling me. I think it's wonderful. I think it's wonderful. I think that anything that a husband and wife, and this is what we started off with the Indian of Achdus, I think anything that two people really are Achdus about, you know, really, you know, they're on the same page and they like the way it's going, that alone is a sign that it's a good thing. Now, again, if it would say in the Torah specifically you shouldn't do that, that would be a problem. But I don't think it says anywhere in the Torah that a woman shouldn't be paying the bills or shouldn't be making the deposits and the withdrawals and checking the bank statements. I think it's fine. Now, very often, by many couples, a woman is better at that. And this is only an example of finances. It could be other things. Sometimes you have somebody who's better at it. An example, taking kids to the doctor. In most homes, the mother is busier taking the kids to the doctor with appointments and medical records and immunizations. If for whatever reason, husband and wife are both okay and happy and not resentful about the fact that the father is better at it and more reliable or more, for whatever reason, he's good, so be it. Doesn't say anywhere that you can't do things that way. I actually think there were a lot of Gedolei Yisrael and a lot of Erlich Eden who relied on the wife to run the finances. Again, of course they were doing it, you know, in compliance with the husband's consent and the way he wants it done, because they knew it was his. If it ever comes the other way around, where it's a control issue, and a woman thinks it's her position, or because she's even earning some money, that's why her husband's not allowed to, doesn't have a say, and it becomes an area of conflict, that's a different story. But if it's being done like this, I think it's wonderful. And I think it's important for people to realize, bechlal, that when somebody's taking care of something, it's not threatening. It's not threatening. Some people get so threatened by, well, you paid that bill? How much did you pay? You didn't show me. Calm down. Unless you have reason to assume there's a problem, you shouldn't feel threatened by it. So if your husband does not feel threatened by your running or being in charge of finances, I think it's beautiful. I think it's very good. And like I said, the fact that you're both on the same page about it is already a sign that I think it's very good. Now, of course, al pi Torah, and this is something that's for everyone, if you relate to it or not, the money does belong to your husband. Al pi Torah, you know, he doesn't have to ask his wife if he could spend money, but if he chooses to ask if there's money available, what could be better than that? I think it's wonderful. So, like I said, of course, being in charge of something doesn't mean that it's yours. You know, it means you're dealing with it with sensitivity and good feeling. And I think that's wonderful. Now, if you feel that something should be mentioned about the finances, for example, right, you needed something and your husband bought something that was too expensive. Now, the truth is this is relevant both ways. If the husband saw the wife bought something that's too expensive as well, even though there he's more entitled, let's say, to say, I'm sorry, you should have asked me before. You know, but in a good relationship, why would he accuse her or blame her for something, you know, if he could be respectful about it? But certainly the other way around, where it's a wife that sees the husband spent a few dollars more than she would have wanted, and she knows, she acknowledges that it's his money. So the question now is, what do we do? Should I say something? Because, you know, I'm trying to be responsible, make sure there's enough money, and you know, there's not going to be enough money if you spend on things that are expensive, right? If we're going away for Shabbos and you have to buy a gift for someone or a chocolate arrangement and you bought in the most expensive place and you could have saved $30 on it by buying somewhere else, there's no reason not to say something. But you have to know how to say it. You have to know when to say it. And when you spoke about this many times, you don't want to say it when somebody will take it wrong. Now, some people are more sensitive than others. Some people have no problem if you tell it to them. But whatever it is, just take it into consideration. Is it the right time to say it? How are you going to say it? When you say it, you can say it nicely. You're going to start off with a compliment of, you know, it means so much to me that you had this in mind and bought it for the family. I appreciate that you buy the good ones. I know it means that you care. I'm wondering if maybe next time we could buy a cheaper version and save some money on it, because, you know, we're a little tight this month. But it still means a lot to me that you took care of it, and I'd rather... There's ways to say things, there's times to say things. And if it doesn't come across like a control issue, why do you buy the expensive one? Oh, what's the problem? So that's just something to think about, knowing how to be thankful and respectful. You know, and sometimes you can even be thankful for the fact that somebody's not stingy. Now, I'll tell you the truth, I appreciate that you bought the expensive ones. I can't stand when people, you know, start nitpicking and saving pennies. I think there was one that's actually much cheaper, so maybe it would be Kedai. You could be appreciative of the fact that somebody doesn't, you know, start skimping and looking for sales and not coming home with anything, because I think there was a cheaper one, I'll go look tomorrow somewhere else. So that's all about how to say things and when. But more often than not, and this, I see this so often, as long as it's not making a serious financial strain, you know, this is something that even if a few dollars go to the garbage, so often it's better to not say anything. Again, if it's a pattern and it's accumulating and it's a problem, of course you want to say something. Like I said, the point is not to just bite your tongue and be resentful and then not be able to cover the month. But so often people get stuck on a few dollars going to the garbage without realizing that by just keeping your mouth shut, it will accumulate to a full $45 throughout the month, let's say, And you can just be respectful and thankful and not say anything. So there's my line that I say often in my classes and shiurim. It's cheaper than therapy. It's cheaper than marriage counseling. It's cheaper than paying to mend resentment and mend the hurt feelings and make up with each other and ask forgiveness. And then buy a gift for someone to forgive you for being mean about the $10 they spent. So it's something to think about. So again, if it's an issue, say it respectfully. As long as you understand that it's your husband's money and you're just mentioning because you think he'll be okay with hearing it, and you say it in a way that he'll be okay with hearing it, then by all means, he knows you're taking care of the finances, he'll probably be fine with that. But so often, just not saying something, you know, put it toward your shalom bias bill. Think of it like that. You know, I'm willing to invest this month $100 in my shalom bias. So if my husband spends some money here and there, not just I won't say anything, I'll keep on thanking him for buying these things that we need. And if it goes over $100, that's when I'll say something. So that's just also something to think about. So in short, is there a problem with a woman being in charge of finances? As long as it's with her husband's consent, and she's good at it, and she's helping him by doing it, I don't see any problem with that at all. I think there's a problem with getting bad advice from sisters and reading books that might give you ideas that your marriage is a problem and that things aren't the way they should be if things are good. That might be a problem. And there's a problem when a woman is in charge of finances in a way that is threatening and controlling and definitely, you know, out of place. So I hope I answered the question, and I hope that people will understand each other and try to see what works for their marriage. If something works for you, if something will enhance your marriage, by all means. And if something won't, then you don't have to take everything so seriously unless it's a Torah-dig idea. The Torah is for all of us. The Torah is here to make the best of every marriage. The Torah is here to teach us a way of life. And when we do things the way the Torah suggests, we'll be able to live together. B'ahava, achva, shalom, v'rayas.